Welcome to a new episode of Caroline Talks. This is the podcast / YouTube channel where I, your host, Caroline Hayes, film critic and journalist, speak to film creators around the world about their work in the industry and what inspires them. And today I'm very happy to be joined by writer and director Katie McGee to talk about her short film, Can, which is premiering at the 2024 South by Southwest Film Festival in the Narrative Shorts program. And this is not Katie's first film. It's not her first short film. She has another one that's titled, I don't want to get the title wrong. It's titled, of course, I'm going to edit up this part. the Person I Am When No One Is Looking. And I'm going to actually ask some questions for you about that because I kind of see some similarities in Can. But first of all, thank you so much for joining me, Kaylee. I'm very happy.
Thanks so much for having me here. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay! So Can is a very personal narrative short about Kaylee's late diagnosis of stage 4 breast cancer and all the emotional toll that played upon you. And it was filmed during treatment, which I thought was very interesting that you decided to make this film while going through chemotherapy and treatment and like the loss of your hair and all of the emotions that come with that and the psychological toll it takes, but also the physical toll it takes. And I first of all have to thank you for making the film, because I know confronting chronic illness and illnesses such as like cancer is a very personal journey for women, especially ones where we lose our hair, you know, like we have to go through the situations like that. So first of all, thank you for making the film and being so open and honest in the process of making it.
Well, so, you're welcome.
No, really, I truly do thank you, because I'm not going to make it about me, but I have MS. So I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2017, and I did have a lot of personal things that I had to work through with regards to my body. Like, my body doesn't function the way it functions before. And I also, the reason my hair is cut short is I actually had a lytic tumor in my skull. So it was removed in 2019, which is why I keep my hair short, because I can't grow my hair back anymore. So at the end, when like your hair started to grow back in the last shot, I was like, oh, she looks like so I just wanted to share that first, because like the film really resonated with me about that, like, about how women in particular, because like society judges us so much about our looks, like you make the film about confronting how society judged you about your looks and how you felt about your looks. Because straight up off the bat, the opening shot is you sitting in a bathtub naked with your bald head, and you're just like, this is me, right? So talk to me first about deciding to be so open in making a film like this and making that first shot be the shot that you decided to open the film with.
Well, thanks for sharing with me what you've been navigating health-wise. And as I've started to share this film with people, I'm realizing that, you know, people are going to want to connect with me on navigating health stuff, because it's such a personal and sensitive topic. So I really appreciate you sharing that with me. Making the film and being so open, especially in that first bathtub shot, you know, it's me being really open and vulnerable and honest and using myself and my life as a canvas has something that I've been doing in my work for a really long time. So it really comes natural to me, and it's part of the way that I process. And I think I do a lot of like deeper reflecting and digging and healing through making art that is so open. It's like, it was so important for me to have a project, to have something to birth into the world while I was going through treatment. And as I was exploring some of these really deep, you know, sometimes surface level, but sometimes like completely like identity crisis, or just like, who am I and what is all this adding up to, being able to try to translate that into a film, into a story, as a means to try to connect with other people and share, that really gave me a purpose. And so even with the opening scene in the bathtub, you know, there was, my bathtub was like a sacred space for me during treatment. I felt like a little kid, just like, I looked like a little kid being completely hairless, and then just like sitting in my bathtub, looking at myself, taking a selfie of myself on my phone and being like, how the fuck did I get here? That was a very honest moment that then I brought into the narrative film.
Yeah, because you're literally stripped down, you know, like you made the reference just now being bald headed like a baby. And when we were babies, like we're completely vulnerable. We're dependent on our parents and our caregivers to protect us, you know, and like we have no hair. Like our skin is tender, you know, our bones aren't fully formed, and that's the most vulnerable we are. But then when you become sick, it's like you go back into that state of vulnerableness again, but this time as an adult. And as adults, we don't know how to handle that, you know, because we're accustomed to our bodies functioning one way. You know, we're accustomed to our body. If we say walk, our body, if you don't even think about it, you know, like walking is just an action that's inherent in us once we learn to do it. But once you become sick and like going through chemotherapy and radiation therapy and all of the different medications that they give you, like that breaks your body down. Like the thing with cancer treatments and treatments for similar conditions is like they give you medication that literally breaks your body down in order to heal it, right? And that changes the way you relate to your body. That changes the way you see yourself and the way you think others see you. And I think it was important to start the film that way because it's kind of surrealist in the way you kind of like frame the shots and like the way you approach the storytelling. But it's surreal in the fact that it is very real. You know, it's a very relatable thing. It's like you're giving us your inner monologue. You're telling us this is the process you went through. And as I said at the beginning, like that you did this film while you were going through treatment. You know, you didn't wait like maybe 3 or 4 years afterwards to say, okay, now I can make a film about this. Like you're like, no, I'm gonna make a story as I'm in it. So talk to me about the vulnerability of it and like because filmmaking is a very ex physically exhaustive and demanding process, and you're the filmmaker and you're also the subject, you know, which that's like two sets of emotional, I guess you could say, baggage that you have to carry, because you have to be able to step aside and step outside as the director and say, okay, this is a creative shot, this is how I want this shot to look. But then once you step into the role of the subject, you have to get back into the mindset of the subject of you. So talk a bit about the being vulnerable as a director and then being vulnerable as Kaylee, the subject of the film.
Being vulnerable as the director and being vulnerable as the subject of the film somehow just was very seamless, and I was able to move through both of the roles almost effortlessly. And I think that's because, it was such an intimate crew, but I also really was so intentional about every single person who was there on the crew with me, and they were all collaborators that I had made things with before and that I trusted like implicitly. So I was really able to show up in front of the camera and behind the camera, 100% with commitment and openness, because some of these scenes, like, I'm stripped down, I'm nude, I'm crying, I'm this, I'm filming it in my own home. So I really set it up, the foundation of even just making the project really allowed me to have that openness. And I'm not sure how like I'm able to kind of toggle between the two, because it really is like kind of two different parts of the brain in one way. I think a lot of the times when I'm performing in front of the camera, I'm often like just subconsciously like directing myself. It's strange.
Is it because like because I wa when I watched this one, of course, but then I watched the other film, the Who I Am When No One Is Looking, and I got the sense that you are very like I'm a very abstract thinker in like you have your own internal monologue, and like like people ask you if you can make a soundtrack about your life, what would it be like? I think you're kind of like that, kind of which is kind of like I kind of do the same thing, like when I'm sometimes if I'm when I'm in a situation of like I kind of think of how I look outside of that of that, and I kind of got the sense that you're the same way. Like when you're in a space and doing something, you're like, oh, I wonder how this would look like as a like through the eyes of a camera.
Yes.
And I kind of got that sense from you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, do you and so do you think being that kind of abstract and visual thinker made it easier for you to in a way step outside of Kaylee the subject and like become Kaylee the director? Yes, you're vulnerable and like you said you toggle between them fairly easily, but do you think it's because of the way how you just think naturally is what made it easier.
Yeah, I think definitely just how my mind works is so like fertile for the visual and emotional and sometimes like musical nature of filmmaking. And I think also processing some of this like complicated stuff that comes up during navigating cancer treatment, it was like easier for me to think about it in terms of the film instead of thinking about it as like my present lived experience, which I don't know if is like the most like healthy way, but in terms of like being, sitting in the car and having like thinking outside of myself, seeing outside of the car, looking in real life and thinking, ooh, this could be a great like kernel of an idea for a scene. It allows me to like navigate my lived experience a little bit more like, ooh, I'm kind of like collecting data and ideas for something bigger than just like me being a human being having like a chronic illness.
Do you think that helps you to be more gentle with yourself in regards to how your body looks? Because like as I like so much of the film is about you grappling and working through the emotional and the mental and the psychological toll of losing your hair, but then also like the weight gain. And then there's also like I know a lot of these medications not called not only just like fat weight, but also like water weight, like you retain a lot of weight. And that changes the way your body looks completely, you
Yeah.
know? And that messes with you. And like, but do you think like thinking of yourself from the outside, like visualizing how you would look from the outside, do you think that helped you to be gentler with yourself with regards to like looking at yourself and saying, the camera loves me, you know, like you can like you know there's some scenes where we're just like the scenes where you have like the flowers and everything, it's like you look great in that shot, but do you think like having that perspective as a filmmaker made you think about yourself differently?
I'm not sure if it made me more gentle on myself, but when thinking as like director Kaylee, looking at some of those shots, some of those days when I looked so sick, so bloated, so like rash all over my face, director Kaylee is going, "This is good.
You're like
She looks, no, yeah, this is
cinematic
gold. She looks so sick. She looks so cancer. This is perfect for this scene." And I think that it allowed me to have a sense of humor about it because I embraced the ugliness. I wasn't necessarily stoked about the ugliness. And I'm like in real time, also kind of disassociated and pretending that it's not, air quotes, the real me. It's somebody else. It's an actor. It's a subject. It's somebody with cancer, but that can't really be me. So it's a lot of different layers happening at once, but I think being director Kaylee, looking at how sick I was and being excited about capturing real cancer, that did feel good in a way.
Right, you're like cinematic gold. You're like yes, ethos, the pathos of it all.
Exactly.
Right, and the thing is, like the thought just occurred to me is like you know like we are able to sympathize and empathize with people easier than sometimes with our own selves. You know, like we are not able to be as patient and as gentle, but also as kind to ourselves. You know, like we'd meet a someone who is also a cancer patient, or like in my case, like an MS patient. I'd be like, I'll have more patience for them, you know. I'll have more patience for another disabled person. But when my body isn't functioning the way I want it to, I lose patience with myself very easily, you know. And I'm always telling myself I'm learning grace for myself, you know. Like it's a learning process. And for you, when I was watching the film, because it would have taken, I'm assuming, it was months of filming. And like I was wondering, like how did you get learn to develop grace for yourself, because the film is it's a short film, but you go through like a whole character arc within the film. You know, you go from being agitated and upset and frustrated and feeling like even guilty. Like there's a sense of guilt, like you're not being who you want to be. But then at the end, you're like you've accepted up to a certain point. You know, you have a certain grace for yourself. So tell me, could you talk about developing grace for yourself?
Developing grace is something I am continuing to work on, and it's something I really, it's a muscle I want to strengthen more than I am good at right now. I had to have a lot of grace for myself throughout the process because I wrote the script, I decided to make this film, then we started shooting, and then, like you said, there's, performer Kaylee and there's director Kaylee, and then there's like the real cancer Kaylee. And those were all kind of happening on different timelines. So even like as we started post-production, I was like developing faster in my own like health stuff was happening at a different time than the person that I saw on screen. And I also felt like I was like outgrowing the story or outgrowing the version of me so quickly because going through cancer treatment like brings so much shit up. Like my therapist says, it's really like forces you to be in like PhD of earth school because yeah, like your body's being poisoned, blah, blah, blah. So I really just, I don't know, there was a lot of like self-judgment from all different sides of like how I looked, how I felt. I really was like grappling with, I wanted to get this story right. I really felt like it was really important for me to translate what I was navigating as honestly as I could. And all those things are like really challenging to do. And so even when I watch the final film now, a lot, I have to like really be like, let's tap into our grace.
And it is a working process. And the thing is like the grace comes and goes. It's like not consistent.
Yeah.
And when I watched the other film, I thought it was there's such a I think a ironic symmetry between this film and like who I am when no one is looking, because your film is who you are when no one is looking, like you're giving the audience, like even your friends, people who would have been around you, your loved ones, a glimpse into your psyche. At that point in time, like they would have seen like the external Kaylee, but they wouldn't have known everything that you were thinking unless you told them, And in the and that and their other film is so much about outward persona, about projecting this persona. Like I want people to look at me. Like the whole thing is I want to be seen. I'm doing this
Yeah.
so that people can see me. I'm walking around with a bandage on my hand so that people can ask me about. I was like, girl, I'm gonna put it together, walking around with a bandage on your hand so that people can see you and ask you about it and be like, oh, she must hurt her hand. But then there's that. But then, like, imagine, like, because that was in 2019. So I was just thinking, like, 24, 2024, you're truly injured. You're truly not well, but you don't want anyone to see that, And I thought there was this, like, this, it was like, life is so strange, Art is so strange because, like, the idea that you had of being seen and being wanted to be seen and being noticed change very drastically in such a short space of time. So talk to me about that art in particular, and like how, like perhaps like thinking back to when you were making that film, you were thinking, girl, like life is not, you're like life is much, but there's other things to worry about rather than instead of putting a bandage on your hand and say I want to be, talk to me about that arc. I thought that was a, like an actual character arc within itself. Like these are like two movies within a movie of your life. So
Yeah.
talk to me about that symmetry and like being a filmmaker and looking back and saying, wow, I had no idea what was coming. My idea of being seen would change so much.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling that out. That's a really special through line and kind of frame to look at. Gosh, I think that in both of the films and something that I'm navigating in real life is this like desire to feel special. And back with the person I am when no one is looking, yeah, just really wanting to feel important, wanting to feel unique, wanting other people to validate me and acknowledge me, and the kind of fascination and obsession with social media and likes and numbers. And it really comes down to me a question of like self-worth. Going from like wrapping a bandage on your hand and going to Whole Foods and hoping that somebody looks at you and talks to you, to then like having a chronic illness and hoping that nobody notices because all I want to do is like blend in and be normal. I don't know. It's like a grass is always greener thing. And then there's also a part of it too that's like, I think during my cancer treatment, I didn't want to just be like a mid-sized mammal who was sick because that just felt so small. So I really wanted it to mean something bigger, but something that I'm still ruminating on and reflecting on is like maybe I am, I am just a mid-sized mammal, and does being having cancer, make you special? I don't know. That's where I can kind of like get into like an existential crisis there. But they are like so connected, and it comes from a hole, a little hole, probably stemming from my childhood of wanting desperately to fit in and blend in and be like all of the cool girls, but also wanting everyone to go, look at her. Now she's special and mysterious.
Yeah, and that's the dichotomy, especially in the society that we live in, especially now where everything is so social media, so about being liked, liked ephemerally, like on Twitter and Instagram. And like I make this post, I hope a lot of people like it. People who don't know anything about me, people who don't like care about you beyond, they look at you like, oh, interesting, like moving on, scroll, keep on scrolling, And it's just like we've been conditioned to put so much value into the thoughts of into the temporary attention that people give us, but there's, I think there's like a pro and a con of that. Like, yes, especially as artists and as creators, like we want people to like what we make, like to validate what we make, to say yes, it matters, yes, this is important, like click the little heart, so that's who's telling me that it matters. But then we think, but does that leave a lasting imprint on them, and like you're, and then you're thinking, but what is that, does that have value in and of itself, like if it doesn't stay in their mind, and if they don't think it's worthy enough to remember, like that doesn't invalidate the importance of it to us, and I think for society, especially for people, when society pays so much attention to like looks, and like to say like, oh, you have to look perfect every time. Even if you're sick, you still have to look the right type of sick, You can't look too sick, but like just a comfortable type of sick. But and I think, and like you're, I think both films kind of like touch on that in a way, where it's like you have to come to a point where you just have to accept yourself and realize I can't be the perfect type of sick, to appease anyone else, because it's about where you, how you feel in the moment. It's about your journey. And in talking about, I want to ask you, there's a very particular conversation that happens in the film, which I thought kind of plays into this, where you're sitting with a friend having lunch, and the conversation, if the things he says, it sounds very cold and very callous and like he doesn't care. But then I thought about it, I'm like, but then sometimes that's what we need, someone who can just be as honest and as brash as possible. And that's it, that's a form of caring. That's a form of showing that they understand you, that he understood you, and he understood what you needed to hear in that moment. And he said it the way that you needed it to be said, because he understands this is how our conversation goes regularly. So I'm not going to change the way I speak to you just because you're sick. He's like, girl, use your cancer to your benefit, Like the go contact Amazon and sell the story of your cancer to them, and like anyone hearing that be like, but then like if you realize it, be like, but he's saying this because this is what she wants to hear, this is what she needs to hear, and he's saying it in a way that you would understand. So talk to me about that conversation, because I thought it was very interesting, because it was like, imagine someone just walk casually walking past and hearing this guy say what.
I'm so glad you called out that conversation. That scene brings me so much joy. My friend Wit, who plays like a bizarre version of himself in the film, just he's so funny. And in real life, he's the sweetest, like softest man. But he and I are very close, and he always does tell it to me real. And I love that conversation because I also feel like, in a way, he's saying some of the things that maybe the audience members are thinking. It's some of the stuff that I'm definitely thinking and the stuff that I need to hear. And I think it's really interesting that he's like a straight white male saying all this shit to me, but it's like the best kind of coming from him in a way, because talking about the way I look, talking about my femininity, talking about like even my double mastectomy in the way that he does, there's something so like light about it, and like it's so intense and like and brazen, but it's like cutting through like no bullshit. So I felt like that was kind of through that voice, that was the best way to have that conversation. And because that could have gone a different way, like me with a girlfriend talking and she's trying to dance around it or be a little bit more maternal and nurturing and soft. And he just comes out and says a lot of really intense stuff.
And like that conversation, how many of the dialogue is scripted and how many was like basically improv in the moment?
It's very much scripted with wit. He did improvise a couple of things, but I wrote that part for him, knowing that he would be able to say all those things in such a naturalistic and funny way.
And what kind of conversation did you have not only with him but with everyone else in the film, like Mamadou Atiku, who plays your boyfriend in the film? Like, what kind of conversations did you guys have, maybe perhaps in like rehearsal or during the filming process, not only about what you were going through personally, but perhaps about what about their but their thoughts on like what on their parts within telling this story with you? Because like, for instance, Mamadou Atiku's character, he's a very loving boyfriend, he's very caring, but he's like unsure, and he's like not feeling romantically inclined toward her, and that creates a tension, you know. It's a tension, but it's a very gentle tension where it's like you wonder, is he scared or is it that he's not attracted? I kind of saw it as that he was scared, you know, like he's scared of being hugging, like of hurting, and then like he sees the vulnerability and the fragileness. So can you talk about the conversations you had with like Mamadou and with your friends and everyone on the set? So especially since, as you said, they were all people that you knew very intimately, and like, 'cause people that you had to trust to bring on to work with you.
Well, definitely, like having, because it's such a personal subject matter, and a lot of the people that were on the cast and crew didn't necessarily have like their own personal intimate experiences with cancer. So there were a lot of conversations about just like the medical, this is what is happening, and this is like where I'm at, and then this is just like what this brings up. And conversations about me sharing very much in a personal way, this is like what this scene is about, this is what I want to explore. And then from more of like a creative way, taking reality and then wanting to enhance it like 33%. So wanting to push things that maybe are similar to what I experienced in real life, but then like wanting to make it bigger for the big silver screen. Mamadou is a com is just such an amazing person and an incredible actor. He is the only person who's involved in the project who I didn't know before. And he actually came to me through Whit, who's Whitmer Thomas, who's in the lunch scene with me. And casting that part of the boyfriend was one of the most challenging parts of making the film, because I really wanted an actor who could bring a lot of vulnerability and a lot of softness and a lot of empathy. And it's just a fine line with his character, because like you were saying and questioning, like, is he scared? Is he attracted to her? Like, what's happening with him? And it's something that I navigated in my real life, like with my partner, you know, going, my partner was like my biggest support system. And it was like also navigating cancer was really difficult for him. Being the person who's like not the patient is a whole completely other experience. And it's like very nuanced and layered. And Mamadou was the perfect person to bring that to the screen, because there's so much complexity and depth in all of his moments on screen. And you can really tell that he's There's so much of an imagination and intention with the world that he's creating inside. And some of that was like through rehearsals and through what I encouraged and what we built together. But a lot of that was like Mamadou also channeling his own personal stuff, which was just beautiful to watch.
And I want to talk about, I want to keep talking about Mamadou and the scenes with him in particular, but I want to talk a bit about the technical differences in those scenes, because I noticed the scenes with him are all very softly lit. You know, it all feels very intimate. It feels almost like a cocoon, like this, where the spaces they're in is just them, you know, it's just their space together. Whereas all the other scenes outside, like the scenes with Wei, are very brightly lit. You know, very like the colors are like almost saturated to a point where they seem like super intense visually, you know. And like the lighting is more clear, whereas the lighting in the scenes are like candlelit, almost kind of like that have that tone to it and like very soft. So can you talk about like maybe, as you said, like the scene, like he, the energy he brought was like very soft and very nurturing. So can you talk about how that informed your decisions with the cinematographer to like kind of separate like your internal and your private scenes with him at home versus your external and the not so private scenes on the outside? Because at home it's just you and him, but outside is everyone else around you, and like, it's almost like you're putting on a facade for everyone else. You know, you're like bright and quirky and goofy, whereas with him it's like you can't hide from him because he's there with you at night. He sees you in a way that no one else gets to see you.
Well, I'm really glad that you picked up on those differences. That was really intentional for a couple reasons, you know, also because Mamadou and my scenes are like in our home. So wanting that environment to feel really like safe and stable, natural, warm. And so we crafted all of the scenes to look like that. But also Mamadou's character is interesting compared to the other characters that we see, because a lot of people, you know, the other characters are not necessarily in opposition with me, but they're a little bit more cold or a little bit more like on the antagonist side of things. And Mamadou, you know, he's trying, he's with me, he's my partner, and there's a division between us, but like, you know, we're also connect, it's like disconnect and connection in this way. So I think also, that's why we went with a lot of the more like nighttime and darkly lit scenes, is that we could bring to life some of the conflict and some of the darkness, but also like nurturing our connection and our love that's just at this chapter where things are a little bit like more difficult and wonky than usual.
Yeah, they are, because it's like there's a scene where you're dressing, like you're going out for a date and you come down the stairways and like you're again having this internal monologue of the things you want him to say and the things that he actually says are completely different. You know, you're like, say I look hot, and he's like, oh, do you want to go change into something more comfortable? You're like, that's not what I wanted to hear, you know. And it's like, and I remember in my head, I was thinking, say something, like tell her she looks nice. What are you doing? Don't hesitate. But he's hesitating because he's in his own head. He's having his own internal monologue that we don't get to hear. But you can tell he's going through the process of like, what do I say that's not going to upset her? What do I say that's not going to hurt her? But what do I say that will still be honest? Because he doesn't want to lie, you know? And like Mamadou is like such a, because I've seen like his previous work as well. And like he's a phenomenal actor, and he's one of those actors that just says so much with very little expression. Like he doesn't need to do like a lot of big things for you to tell what his characters are thinking. And so like that scene where he's at the bottom of the stairways and he's looking at you, and you can see this ha entire conversation he's having with himself, but then like you're having a conversation with him at the same time, both in your head almost. And then verbally, like what you're saying in your heads are not the, what you're saying with your mouth, but it's like it comes to the I felt like you guys came to a resolution in that scene where it's like you're both finally realizing, oh wait, this is what's really happening here in our relationship, and this is when we have to realize we really got to work on it because things can go wrong if we don't communicate the right way. So I want to talk about that particular scene because I think that's one of the scenes in the film. There's that scene and another scene I want to really talk about where you get to see the true essence of the Kaylee, the subject. really coming to a resolution with herself and like the relationship she's had with people and saying, yes, this is happening to me, but it's also happening to the people around me as well. So talk to me about that particular moment at the bottom of the stairs where you're just like, yeah, like it's, we need, like something needs to change here before it all goes terribly wrong.
The scene where I come to the bottom of the stairs to me is so funny and so pathetic and so painful and beautiful. I think it's also a scene when I watch it now that I feel like I look like a baby, like almost like a child dressed up in a woman's clothes. And bringing that scene to life with Mamadou, I think that was the scene that he had the most questions about, wanting to make sure that what the choices that he made as the character really felt real to him and really made sense, because he in real life is such a sweet, caring guy that, like, when I'm he wanted to say, like, you look great, but like, are you sure you wanted to wear that? So sometimes, like, him saying some of the lines, he felt like, oh, are you sure about this? But really, his character in this story is navigating a lot of stuff. But one of the things that his character is navigating is his journey of authenticity. And he's really working at being able to identify what he's thinking and feeling and translate it to himself and to me and to the world. So he doesn't think that I look great in that. And so he doesn't want to say that because he's really working on being honest. And sometimes that's like so painful when you just feel like maybe you should say a white lie or
I know,
something.
right? You're like, lie to me.
But it really is like, just two people going through this difficult experience and going, they're each having their own different experience in the same scene. And like you said, they're both so in their head. And my character's feeling like if he can just validate me and tell me I look good, even though I know I look like a fool, then I'll be okay. And I think there's a part of him that just wishes that all this wasn't real, that his girlfriend was healthy and could just go out to him with an event for him. And that maybe the evening could just be not be about Kaylee, not be about her cancer, but just be about him, like this search for like normalcy. Because going through something like that as a couple, as a person, like there's nothing about it really feels normal.
But the thing is, I didn't think that you or that Keely in that moment looked foolish. I think you look uncomfortable, and there's a difference. Like, there's a saying, don't let the clothes wear you, wear the clothes. And in the moment, I felt like the dress was wearing her. I was like, you can tell she's not uncomfortable. And the way we feel in our clothing, I think, affects the way people perceive how we look in the clothing. Like, if I see my sister in an outfit, I'd be like, you should. And the reason I say that is not that it necessarily looks bad. It's just like how she's feeling in that moment changes the entire perception of how she looks in it. Because she can feel better in that, like then like 2 weeks later and put on the same dress and would look completely different. So I was thinking in my head, I was like, she doesn't look foolish, but she just does look uncomfortable, you know? And I think that's kind of what he was getting at as well. He could tell she's not the confident Kaylee that I know, you know, she's not the person that would just put on the dress and like probably walk out the door, you know? And that ties into the other scene, the scene with the photographer, where you go for the professional photos. And like that entire sequence is very interesting because like that's one of the scenes where I felt like you were putting on a facade, you know, the facade that's very different to the persona that Kaylee has at home with the boyfriend, you know, like. There's the scene where the photographer is very standoffish and she's giving like these directions, but like Kaylee isn't really feeling it. She has these giant fake roses stuck into her pants, and I'm like, that can't be comfortable, you know? And it's kind of like absurd, you know? And the absurdity is a really interesting thing that I got from it because it's supposed to be like this moment of empowerment. You're like, you know, I'm embracing this. I'm embracing how my body looks. I'm showing off the scars and showing everyone the scars and how I look, you know? But it's kind of absurd because you have these long stem fake roses stuffed into your pants. right? But then there's a scene that comes a little bit later where it really does get intimate again, where like the photographer is closer and she's very teary-eyed and she's like, I'm scared, you know? And the reason she's scared is because she's scared to see the real you know, up close, up personal. You can't really touch it up. Like what the camera's catching at that moment can't be altered, you know? So talk to me again also about that scene, because that scene and then the sequence at the bottom of the stairs are the two scenes that really, to me, talk about how like the vulnerability of this film, what this film is about. It's about being vulnerable with not only yourself, but with the people watching you and the people who are seeing you.
Well, both of those scenes, are like you said, that the clothes can wear you. I think that there's a version of Kaylee or a different person that could be in that photo shoot scene with the roses and the makeup and be freaking owning it and feeling like empowered and badass. But it wasn't the right authentic thing for Kaylee, just like that dress wasn't the right authentic thing for Kaylee in that moment. And such a thing that like I was navigating was like trying, figuring out what is the right thing for me? What is the right way of me in the present moment, like navigating cancer and trying to do it the way that I saw other people doing it on social media or whatever, like that always is wrong. And it results for me personally in like disassociated chaos when I'm trying to be someone else or trying to fast forward through whatever I'm navigating to be at a different place. It's not good. With the photo studio scene, when we revisit that moment with the photographer, that was really like a healing moment for me of if I had the chance to go back and do it differently, if I had the ch what did I want to happen with that photographer? What did I need with that photographer? I really wanted her to come closer and to see the real me. And so in that fantasy sequence, I chose to kind of rewrite reality in that way to maybe be authentic, to like give myself the power to say what I actually wanted to say in that scene, but that I just didn't have the wherewithal to do.
Yeah, the scene, that's the one, like that's, I'm saying that's the scene where I felt like Kaylee came to a resolution where she was like, okay, I need to be honest here, you know, instead of trying to play it off like you're, it's a serious photo shoot, like she's bearing all to the photographer, to her friend that's standing there supporting her, to all of the people working on the set, but she's not being honest in the moment, you know. It's like this, as I said, it's supposed to be like a moment of empowerment, but it's coming up more as an absurdist situation, not because of Forrest, but because of the attitude that she had in that moment, you know, like she wasn't taking it seriously. She was kind of like posing, but not seriously, you know, like not feeling it. You could tell she's not feeling empowered in this moment. So then when that scene with the close-up happens, that's when that's like the aha, the like bum moment where she was like, if I want this to work, if I want this to do what I want it to do, I need to be vulnerable to the and honest with the photographer, you know. She's like, if I'm gonna look back at these pictures, I have to be honest in the moment so that when I do look at them, I do feel empowered, you know. And that's like where I think for the film, I think those, that scene at the scene at the bottom of the stairs was where it was really like, when you're sick, like there has to come a moment you say, what do I want out of this, you know? And it sounds weird to say, what do I want out of this sickness, but you have to like tell yourself, like, am I gonna just not do anything and let the sickness control me, which it will to a certain extent, but then you realize, how am I going to deal with this? You know, what's the mentality that I'm going to approach it with? You know, it's going to be hard, it's going to be difficult, it's going to be painful, and it's going to hurt so much. But then it's like, what's the mindset I'm going to have? Not only when you're going through this, but after it, you know? So I thought those two scenes were rare. It's like, this is where you tell, like, for especially for audiences who don't understand what having a chronic illness is like, you're like, this is like, I think this was, I saw those as a scene where it was, if I tell my family or my friends and say, this is kind of like how I've had to have these kind of moments in my life and say, this is how I'm going to approach having MS, you know, this is going to help, this is how I had to approach living with like endometriosis and fibroids and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, there has to always have like this one moment where you're just going to be like, okay, either I give up or I just like, you know, like, actually work at it, you know, work at it. Like we were saying, like grace is a learning process, and like, you got to work through it every day. It's like that moment is where you decide, I have to learn to give myself grace. You know, that's when you come to the realization that you do have to learn to give yourself grace. That was a bit long. I'm sorry.
No, I you said that really beautifully, and you're so thoughtful, and you're asking really beautiful questions and connecting a lot of dots in a really insightful way. I really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. And so, and another question that I did want to have to ask you is, after you finished the film, and after your hair started growing back, you know, like that, because that's where you ended the film. You started the film with no hair. I ended the film with hair. You know, the hair growing back, the peach fuzz. Like when you were doing the editing process, when did you decide, okay, I need to have another moment to bookend the film? You're like, I started the film with no hair. When did you realize, okay, I need this moment to come in and make sure that I end the story here? It's not a complete ending because you're still going through the journey, but for the sake of the film, you're like, I need to have something here to make this ending work. Because it could have been the ending where you're on like the mountain overlooking the city, and like it's a beautiful sunset. You have all this beautiful like lighting and cinematography, and you're like, that could work as an ending, but then you're like, it can't. So like, when did you like decide that, like, I need another ending to bookend here?
Well, great question. The ending was a big point of discussion, and I wasn't, the ending is different than the original script. I really, with the original script, really wanted to capture just a snapshot of treatment. Just okay, we're just in the middle of the middle right now. But like I said earlier, as I was like making the film, I was going through I was moving through different steps in my treatment process. So as I was editing the film, my hair started to grow back, and it felt a little bit lighter and brighter and more hopeful and positive. And so I wanted to bring that element to the story. And there's also a point of like wanting to kind of, I think that's where the debate about the end came with like my collaborators, is like, okay, well, at some point I have to just like call it and stop, because like my real life is going to keep going. But I didn't want to just end it with me being in the thick of treatment, because for me, I do feel hopeful. And I had stage 4 breast cancer, and a lot of people don't come out of that. And I've been super blessed with like top-notch medical care, and I'm being treated for a cure, and I'm on the path to being in remission. And so it truly is like a story of getting well and like hope. And I'm not sure what's going to happen in my real life. I'm not sure where I will go with my illness. I'm not sure where I'll go creatively, but having a glimpse of that in real life, I felt like it was really important to bring it into this film. And the other side was like, kind of like you said, end it in that fantasy moment, end it on the hill or that, or kind of take it to like a meta direction and just call cut in the middle. And some people thought that this ending was me kind of trying to wrap it up in a cute little perfect bow. But I felt like, my story is hopeful, so I really wanted to communicate that.
I don't think it's about tying up in a neat bow, because like even if your hair is growing back, like the struggle is not over, you know. I kind of saw it as the new hair is a symbol of a new beginning, you know. It's a
Yeah.
new chapter in the story. You're like, I've gone through the hairless journey, you know, I'm beginning the journey with hair. And the thing is, like, and it may sound weird to people to be like, but she's had hair before, so she knows what, like, it's different. You know, it's different when you have to cut the hair off, or when the hair falls out and it starts to grow back. Like, you feel very different about your
Yeah.
hair. You know, like the hair that you have after treatment and going through things like that is not the hair that you had before. Like for me, like when I had the surgery, I had to shave. It was almost practically bald, you know, but like the hair that I have now is not the same, because my hair, the texture has changed completely. And my sister's like, why is your hair straight? I'm like, this side of my hair is like straight, this side of my hair is like curly, and like I can hear when I people and when I wash my hair, it sounds like rain falling on a tin roof. And I'm like, it really does, because I have a piece of titanium in my head right here.
Whoa.
It's so funny. At school, I think I'm like part of the term. I'm like, if Skynet decides to awaken, I can pretend to be a part of Skynet. But like, it's like going through these situations, it changes your perception of yourself, you know? Like, you're gonna look at yourself with hair very differently to the way you looked at yourself with hair before, you know? And like, it's a new journey. So anyone can say, oh, it's like it's a too neat of an ending. It's not, because life is complicated and unpredictable, you know? And you're just like, you're saying like, I'm just closing this chapter and I'm beginning a new one, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's continuing. So like, anyone who doesn't like that, I'm like, too bad for you. I like the ending.
Well, my hair grew back dark brown and curly.
I was
So
gonna ask you about that, because in the
it's like,
film there's pictures of yourself and you have blonde hair, and even in your first film you had blonde hair, and I'm like, did she dye her hair? Like, what is going
No, it grew back dark brunette. And it's like, you probably can't tell, but I have like Shirley Temple ringlets. And people are like, wow, how do you feel about your hair? Are you gonna? And I'm just like, I don't know how I feel yet. I'm just excited to have hair. Like,
on?
I don't know. I just feel like, who is she? When I look in the mirror, yeah, it's like my hair, I feel so differently about my hair now than I did at the beginning of all this.
And like the and that's and I think being able to say like, oh, I like new me, new she, you know, is a gift in and of itself. Like being able to like, and whether you're sick or not, just being able to like approach like the future with a sense of positivity and hope is important for all of us, you know, like because we don't know what's gonna happen tomorrow. So like, be hopeful today. That's something that I'm learning to appreciate for myself, like every day. Even if I'm having bad days, I'm always just like, I'm sure there has to be at least one good thing. And I'm like, yeah, my dog. You know? At least
Oh.
I have my dog. If I'm going through like a flare up or something, I'm like, at least I have my dog when she remembers that I exist. Because other times she scares me. And you know, but like we have to remember that there's something on the other side, you know, there's something beyond. So again, but thank you so much for taking the time for talking with me, Kaylee, and for making the film.
Thank you. Thanks for being so thoughtful and like reflective on all of your questions and all of the things that you brought up. It was really a delight to talk to you.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. And congratulations on your first showing for South by Southwest. This is the first time you've had a film showing there. Are you
Thank
going to
you.
be in your are you going to be in Austin for the film premiere, because it's premiering
Yes,
on the
I'm.
10th?
My first time at South by Southwest, my first time in Austin, and I'm taking Can to Austin, and I also have a music video in the festival, and I'm just so excited.
The name of the music video is Yacht, right? It's called
Yacht is the name of the band,
Big
and
Web.
the video is called My Idea.
Yay, so yay. And congratulations on all of that. And I hope you have an amazing time at the festival. Eat all of the Texan food you can. I haven't been to
Okay.
Austin yet, so like that's one of my goals, to attend South by Southwest there in person and just like try authentic Texan food one day.
Okay, I'll try it. I'll report back.
So everyone, that was my interview with filmmaker Kaylee McGee to talk about her short film Can, which premiered at the 2024 South by Southwest Film Festival in the Narrative Short Program 2. It was great to talk with her, and like I felt like kind of bad in my head. I was thinking, am I rambling too much? But I'm glad that she really appreciated my insight and like my questions. And this film, when I started, I was just like, oh, this kind of feels like me when I was going through when I, because I would, there was points in my time with my MS, I was going through intravenous treatments and trying new medications. It did not end well with the medication, but like it affected me physically. Like I developed scars on my body, and like then when I had to shave my head to for the tumor removal, I just, when I was watching some, I was like, I've been through this, not the cancer, but just like, you know, the internal angst of like how you feel at your body, about your body, and how society perceives you, and how society wants you to look, and how we're expected to feel about ourselves in the midst of sickness and chronic illness. And I just like related to it so much, and I appreciate Kaylee taking the time for talking with me and for being so honest in the interview. And I wish her much success. And I will also provide a link to the short film, Who I Am and No One Is Looking, because I think it's a really fascinating look at who she is as a filmmaker. But also, as I mentioned in the interview, it's like a really interesting juxtaposition and almost like a 180 from this film, Cannes. So I'll include that as well in the description notes. And so, of course, you can find this interview with Kaylee as well as my other interviews for South by Southwest and other film festivals that I did for Sundance in January. Of course, TIFF and others on my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/@Carolyn_Hines, which of course will be linked in the description box here for the podcast. Go to my R3 page, see all of my published writing, op-eds, interviews, reviews, film analysis, what have you there. And follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Carrie CNH12. That's CARRIE CNH12. And until the next episode, everyone, stay safe. Bye.